The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 2020. On the podcast today, David Ciclatera, chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG, and David provides some operational highlights since mid-January. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, money analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the coronavirus and commodities. Also on the podcast, I have two lists for you. Every day I do this. I think they're quite important lists, actually. And that's the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets, and also the top five most liked RNSs released in the last 24 hours. And by the way, if you want to get your RNS on that list, then if you get the app, download the app for free. And if you like the contents of an RNS you've read, hit the thumbs up button, you know, within that RNS. And if it gets enough of those, it'll appear on this top 10 list. In fact, I read out the top five. You can see top 10 versions of both of this at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG. Is ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Morning, Justin.
Yeah, and you've had some decent news out. You've done an update on Brick Live, and it's released in the markets, and the market seems to be liking this a lot. You're up by nearly 20% as I'm looking. So we'll dig into that. As always, though, David, I hate to sort of assume that everyone listening knows exactly about the company. So just summarize it for people not familiar, if you could.
Live Company owns a brand called Brick Live. Brick Live is to do with it's an educational entertainment-based brand based around bricks, the building of bricks. Brick Live is a global affair. We have shows and events all around the world, that's basically what we do.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and look at the RNS here. It seems to be broken down into three kind of areas. You've got contracted revenue, you've got updates from the zoos, and also you talk about coronavirus, which, of course, is quite relevant in your situation, doing touring, you know, companies or groups and all that. Rather. So let's start with contracted revenue first, David. Go into that, if you could, please.
Well, we've just announced, if you add the contracted, which is 3.2, and I think couple of hundred thousand of out for contract revenue, it's £3.5 million, which putting it into perspective, the market currently has us trying to achieve £7 million for the year. So at the end of February, that's not a bad position to be in, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's look at the zoos. Take us through the zoos and also just general events, if you could.
Well, I think zoos, obviously, if you go back, I think it's always interesting to think about where did Brick Live come from? Well, the first show that we got involved in fact, the first show we called Brick Live was in 2016. We've grown significantly over the last 2 years. In last year, we were in 71 events. Obviously, that's growing this year. We started the zoo program. We started raising money, and we raised successfully money this time last year, actually, for the zoo program. And that is now pretty much everywhere. It's in the United States, it's in Europe. And this is quite an important announcement today because it's the first German zoo. I didn't realize when I got involved in this program that the number one set of zoos in the world is in Germany. They have over 400 zoos in Germany of all different sizes. So we've worked very hard. This is in partnership with our partner AWC, and we are very proud that that the first zoo has been announced today. And I know there are discussions for quite a few more. So the zoo program is approximately 30% of our revenue. It obviously is a growing. It's growing for us. If you look at the zoos that we've been involved with, the interesting thing is the revenue is recurring. They come back. I take Marwell Zoo, which was obviously our first ever zoo. You know, we're now into our third year with Marwell, and the next show is launching, I think, in April. We've got lots of discussions, not just in Europe, not just in the United States, around the world. And I've just come back, actually, from Cape Town, where We're looking at doing a zoo-related product and over Christmas period there. So it's the assets that we've built, the assets that we're building are in high demand. So I'm personally very pleased to see this, and the margins relate to this product are also very good, because obviously it's a win-win for everybody. The zoos themselves, I don't always get this percentage right, but I think it's circa 15% increase on their ticket revenues, which is obviously fantastic for them. It offers a trail that within certain zoos they charge for and have made really good returns on. So the zoos are obviously happy because they come back. We're happy because we're producing this for them. And above all, the kids are happy, and they're getting not just entertained but educated. You know, the famous program that we launched in China, which was really the biggest sort of thing we built at the time, which is all about saving the various species that are obviously in danger. So it's a win-win for all.
Yeah, yeah. Let's, you know, you called Live Company Group, you do live shows, you're in public areas with lots of people, and of course you can't avoid it at the moment, it's everywhere with the coronavirus, and you've included this in your update. So how do you expect the coronavirus to affect your company then, David?
Well, the first thing is, at the beginning of the year, and this is, we've already stated this in public, we factored in the issues in China. So the revenues that were in our Chinese numbers were in the main taken out. We've also made some other factors for inside Asia. So we've already factored commercially in the reality. People talk about the bell curve, which is the coronavirus. You know, it comes, and I think most people expect by the summer that obviously it won't have completely gone, but it will have gone through that. If you look at all the statements that are being made by our own government today. And obviously, live events are a crucial element. But we're quite, I think we're not just fortunate, I guess it's just the reality of how our business works. Most of our business is in Q3 and 4, which is obviously some way away. We've just completed our first half-term activities in Leeds and Bracknell, which were very successful. Obviously, we're very mindful of the reality, but I think you've also got to look at the opportunities that this brings. Every single city that is affected, the mayor of Milan, the mayor of Singapore, or the mayor of Seoul, they're all saying the same thing. They're basically, obviously, deeply affected by what's going on now, but they're looking for the future. Mm-hmm. And in the last 10 days, we've been approached by two different cities in Asia, both of whom are wanting to use our product at the end of the year as a way of bringing back tourists that have left, tourists that they need to bring back. And there will be significant sums spent, not just in Asia, but in our own country here. I mean, if you think of the government today, I think talks about economic stimuli. The retail sector has had a tough time, and we're very proud of the things that we've achieved and all the successes that we've achieved working with cities and various bids. We've won 14 bids out of 17 that we bid for, so we're in good position. I think we're not here to make anything from the crisis that's there, but the reality is people will have to spend money, and I think we're a proven factor in bringing people back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true what you say. You know, the governments around the world have already pledged to fight back economically against this, so I suppose that's going to help a lot, isn't it? You know.
Well, it has to. I mean, I happen to personally know, just for other reasons, the mayor of Seoul. And, you know, this is a man who's been three-time mayor, so he's a bit like Boris Johnson was two-time mayor, so he's on to his, I don't know, 12th year or 11th year or whatever he's been as mayor, so he knows his city pretty well. And obviously, Korea is one of the most affected areas in the world, and they're planning. They're not just, you know, they have to plan for today that everybody's doing, but they've also started to think about what do they do? I mean, how do they get people back? And I've seen it before in my other life, before I got involved in Live Company. I've always been involved in Asia, or certainly over the last 20 years, and I lived through SARS. I remember being probably the only person, two other people in the Mandarin Oriental in Hong Kong in the middle of SARS. So it it has a way of coming back. And we've got a really interesting product, and it's a timeless product. It's a product that basically isn't time sensitive. I mean, the fact that we have things like Paw Patrol or own product, we own this stuff, and we're also we're in a hugely significant building stage right now. We're building 16 new tours, so by the end of this year we'll have 31 tours. So we're going to be in well positioned to react to people's requests.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, as always, David, three reasons right now. If someone likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the company, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, normally I give the same reasons, so I'll start with what they are. And the management own significant slice of the action, which means that we're very committed to the great growth and the value of the company. I think the fact is that we own our own product, that we built our own product, and the third was we're global. I guess in a strange way, I think also that for various reasons our share price is what it is, and our current share price is less than the asset value of the company. So if I was out there and I'd had nothing to do with this company, I think it's quite an interesting company to look at.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, David, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I think you're going to find that we're going to be talking probably 4 or 5 times this month.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, I'm good. Thank you.
We didn't chat last. We didn't manage to sync our diaries, but it's been a very volatile week in the markets. Phenomenal. It's like 1,000 points decline on the Dow 3 days in a row, pretty much, and then back up with 1,300 points in one day a couple of days ago. So, you know, it's all centered on China. As we know, you know, it's very relevant, very pertinent to your area because you're a mining analyst. And as we know, China guzzles up half the world's commodities, pretty much, you know, copper and all that stuff. And so it's, you know, it's affecting the metal prices, isn't it? I mean, one that's doing well. Yesterday, gold. I hold gold in ETF. But as soon as the Fed announced their emergency cut, I just jumped in quickly and bought some more. And it rose. I literally bought about 1,600, I think it was. And it went up to 16, almost 50, you know?
So, well, the interesting thing is that the Fed made the cut. The market moved higher, which was a knee-jerk reaction. And then, of course, they realized that the reason why the Fed is making the cut is because there are some real problems coming at the U.S. economy. And this is down to logistical disruption in China. Clearly, there's lots of factories that have been shut in an extended shutdown because of the coronavirus. Lots of lorries that are not able to get across regional borders. And so it's not just the fact that the factories have been closed for longer, and they're getting back to work now, but it's the fact that actually the logistics haven't been working. And now we're going to see more impact of this in the United States, where containers of parts for cars and aircraft and all sorts of other things just won't be arriving. So they're scrambling around to see, well, can we get these parts made elsewhere in the US and the Western world? And some of that they will be able to do, but quite a lot they won't. To give you a specific example, you can outsource components to, shall we say, other US manufacturers, but there will be components within those components that have to come from China because they won't be made anywhere else. I'm not going to go into any more detail than that, but there are certain things that involve rare earth elements, for example, that are critical to so much of what is assembled these days in the West that are only made in China, and that's a problem.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm just looking at some news out today, and retail car sales in China, world's biggest auto market, fell 80% in February because of coronavirus. 80%. That's in 1 month, and that's a huge amount, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, they did shut an awful lot of car dealerships. And not only did they shut a lot, but the ones that were open in sort of outlying regional areas were, people didn't want to go to them in case they, you know, touched a car door handle and picked up a virus. So this has a huge impact on the economy. And it's very easy for us in the West to say, oh, this won't happen over here. But actually, yes, it might, because what the authorities are doing in China is trying to slow down the rate of transmission, because the hospitals fill up. There's a certain number of people that require hospitalization and real treatment with the virus, and there's only so much capacity to deal with this. And so, yes, our governments have had more time to think about this and hopefully to prepare. So we have to hope that they really are learning from the Chinese, because I don't think the Chinese have been particularly slow in their response. And I think, yes, we are going to see towns and cities shut down in different ways, whereas the Chinese force people to stay inside. The governments in the West just ask people to self-isolate. So hopefully people will be disciplined and good at this. But clearly it's going to happen slightly differently over here. Fortunately, we know a bit more about the virus than the Chinese did when it first came out. And I think that will enable us to manage and slow down the infection better, which is good. And I think the mortality rate is going to be very much lower at the end of the day than was first mooted, because of course I think there's many more infections out in the community than are ever recorded, so it may be that this isn't so much worse than your average winter flu, but unfortunately there will be a higher incidence of hospitalization and people requiring treatment to keep those mortality rates down.
Yeah, you know, the hysteria around this is going to have an impact. I mean, that's part of the problem, isn't it? It's the hysteria around it. Of course, China did very well, I think. And a lot of people say you can't believe the figures. But I think they've been, according to, I've heard doctors saying they've been very open with their figures and very open with the science behind it. So I think they're pretty much telling the truth on this. And, you know, it's going to have a massive... The problem is, in my mind, as an investor, I think that this... I think if I don't know something, but I know it's a risk, then, you know, it's a known risk and I can avoid it. So I suppose that's what happened with the market a little bit. You know, I've been sort of reducing positions for months now, and I've been holding cash, about 40% cash in my portfolio for months. And I haven't really changed in the last few weeks because I've been there anyway. This will compound it. And I think if we are headed toward recession, I think we'll get there faster because of this. And I know all the banks and everything, central banks are going to stimulate and stuff. But I just think if in doubt, just get out, you know, and wait. Wait for more evidence, because we don't know how deep this cuts. You know, like I say, 80% retail sales, and car retail sales in China drop in 1 month. That is phenomenal. And we don't know how far it's going to reach over here, but I just think the hysteria around this now is going to affect our economies as well. But I don't know how deep. It's going to affect it. I just don't know how deep. Have you any idea? Do we have any idea how much? We don't, do we really?
Well, there's certainly going to be more volatility in markets and more disruption. It's difficult to understand how much this will impact global growth. But what we know is that there's going to be a massive stimulus response. The Chinese have already offered a certain amount of stimulus. The Italians came in very quickly, offering, I think it was 3.6 billion euros of stimulus. I'm sure we're going to see similar stimulus packages in the US, the UK, certainly Germany, which was teetering on the edge of recession anyway, and probably all the other Western nations will have to stimulate one way or another, because there's going to be problems with business. I mean, restaurants, hotels, shops are all seeing reduced levels of business anyway. Anyone related to tourism or travel, I think, is going to see significantly lower revenues and walk-ins. All this has to be managed so that thousands of businesses or hundreds of thousands of businesses don't go under it through this period. And that's the reason why the Fed have cut rates early. And I suspect the Bank of England will also look to cut rates as well. The ECB doesn't have much more room to cut rates, but they'll have to do something. But the rate cuts themselves won't be enough. There will need to be other forms of quantitative easing and stimulus in order to avert recession.
And there's only one benefactor of this, really, isn't it? I suppose, commodity-wise, and that's gold. You know, I mean, it's certain. I mean, obviously, of course, it may stimulate other commodities in the longer term. But I mean, straight away, as they reduce interest rates, yields go down. Like I said, the 10-year yield in a 10-year note in America, the first time ever. The yield went below 1%, and gold rallied like hell yesterday. And I thought, well, surely that's going to continue happening. Gold is going to keep on rallying, isn't it?
Well, these are extraordinary times. There's going to be a huge amount of QE, that is money printing. And what this means is more money printed devalues the value of paper money. And the one thing that should remain constant is gold. So the relative value of gold versus the dollar in your pocket goes up. So yes, the gold, I see only one way for gold at the moment, give or take a bit of volatility. Gold is good. And that, of course, is good for the underlying gold miners.
Yeah, yeah, and any gold miners you got your eye on, John, or you know, keep it, you know, have knowledge on?
Well, there's a number in the UK market, and they've got pretty pathetic valuations because they've been unloved for a long time. And I'm looking at Anglo Asian Mining, Shanta.
That's done well, Condor. Though. Anglo Asian Mining's done very well, hasn't it? Share price wise, you know.
Yeah, so it was revealed a while ago that the government was looking at buying the business. And yes, I'm sure that will happen at some point, but I couldn't say what the actual price paid will be. But certainly there is a very interested buyer there who I don't think is about to go away. So yes, it's an unusual situation, and it's a company that does fundamentally well. It's a good underlying business with expansion potential, and it's one of our clients, which is very nice to have.
Yeah. Any others? I know I've had on a couple of times. I've spoken to the management of Cora Gold, which it's still an explorer. There's also Hummingbird, which owns a big chunk of Cora. They're a producer. They're bringing down their sort of debt and stuff, and doing quite well. Any other sort of you can think of, John?
Well, Cora are actually looking at the economics of transporting ore from their discovery down to Hummingbird, which is nice. So there should be cash flow to come out of that. Condor Gold this morning, they're talking about a revised high-grade pit option. They're looking to go into production in Nicaragua at 80 to 100,000 ounces, with that to rise to 120,000 ounces. So there's quite a lot to happen there. And then again, so that's another client of ours. And then there's Shanta Gold, which we quite like, in Tanzania. It's slowly sorting out the problems that it's had in Tanzania, as everybody has had. So not the world's favourite nation from a mining perspective, but things are getting better. And Shanta, like other gold mining companies, should pay off their debt much faster at this gold price than anyone anticipated.
Yeah, so, do you know, that is why I've gone for an ETF there. I mean, trouble with gold, the countries they mine the gold in, you know, questionable jurisdictions and work practices sometimes are very questionable as well. And that's why I've gone for an ETF that's just based against the physical gold price, you know. So, because it's hard to know what's going on there, isn't it, sometimes?
Well, with the companies, you get a bit more fun, you get a bit more leverage. There's always the odd wild card, political wild card. But generally, these countries don't behave that badly. It would be harder to run a gold mine in Surrey, for example, than it is in Azerbaijan. Yeah. And actually, if you look, many of these governments are actually very supportive because they want the investment, they want the jobs. It's just once in a while something comes up where some politician uses a situation for their own ends. But normally the companies are pretty steady. And yes, there is debt that builds up in mining, particularly if you build a project in a low gold price environment. But when the price comes up like this, the debt levels get paid off really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marvellous stuff, John. Anything else worth chatting about?
Look, I think we're just going to watch what goes on in the world. I think it's a situation where, yes, inventory levels will probably build a little bit in certain parts of the world in the base metals. But I think nickel is going to get drawn down because the coronavirus is going to impact production in China and Indonesia. Copper inventories rose. quickly, but I think they'll be drawn down fast as well, because manufacturers who were worried and wanted to raise a bit of cash by dumping metal into the market are also going to want to look to restock as production returns in China. And I think there'll be more stockpiling by manufacturers in the US and the rest of the Western world. So for me, I see this situation, although it will knock demand because of lower GDP, I actually see the restocking as probably driving prices back up quite quickly. So we could see a bit of what was described as a V-shape in terms of metal prices and metals demand.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Marvellous stuff. Cheers, John. Speak to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, GAN PLC. At four, Empire Metals. At three, Advanced Energy. ADV is ticker there. At two, Tertiary Minerals. And number one, it's Westminster Group, down 9.43% and 9.51 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Hummingbird Resources, Director Dealing. Who is that there? It's Dan Betts, is it? Okay. At four, he bought some shares. Dan Betts bought some shares there. At four, it's STX Energy, update on drilling operations in Morocco and Egypt. At three, Powerhouse Energy, planning permission granted for DMG at Proto site. At two, Predator Oil and Gas, approval, Surif, environmental impact assessment. And at one, Argo Blockchain, February update, mining income up 56%. So the income went from 1.63 million last month in January to 2.54 million in February. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.